I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Final hour of Grant and Danny on this Monday. Thanks for listening, as always, to 106.7 The Fan. If you were listening during the 11 o'clock hour today, we had the privilege of talking to Joe Jacoby, former Redskins legend, and Joe Theismann, of course, a Super Bowl champion with the Skins, on their memories and recollections of the late Joe Bugle, who unfortunately passed away and left us this weekend at 80 years old. We wanted to look at Bugs in round two here in Washington, though, his second go-round with the Redskins and the energy he still had. And who better to talk to about that than a guy that was on that staff with him, who's still in the league as one of the NFL's most revered defensive coordinators of his era. Greg Williams is with us on G&D. Greg, it has been forever. Hope you're doing well. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes. How are you?
You know, I'm doing very well, and I really appreciate you reaching out. Yesterday, it was a tough day for all of us, and I was driving back from a big fundraiser from the state of Missouri, where I'm from, when you reached out to me, and it did bring a smile to my face, and I love the Washington fans. They're still some of my most fun people and still friends. A lot of them are still friends and come to my golf tournament and do all that kind of stuff to help raise funds for kids. But, you know, one of the things I thought when you called yesterday, you texted out yesterday, is that how fired up I was once I found out that I was going to have a chance to work with the legendary Joe Gibbs. But then I found out that he convinced Joe Bugle to come back out of doing all the other things he was doing to coach again too, and I was amazed, and I felt just honored that I was going to be able to work with both those guys, and Bugs was something else.
He's a character. I'm curious, like, did you know him at all? Because it's such a small fraternity before you started working with him in Washington, and what did you first get to know him through, kind of when he was with the Redskins there with you? What were those first few weeks like as you learned all about Bugle?
Yeah, I was with him, or not with him, but coached against him at several other NFL places before I'd ever, you know, got a chance to be with him on that staff. So yeah, from the time he left the Redskins and had times with other different franchises, you know, I was with the Oilers and the Titans and the Bills and all that stuff with some of those other teams before, you know, he stepped out after the Raiders and as the head coach, went against him when he was the head coach at the Cardinals and, you know, not the Cardinals, but the Raiders and everything. So had a chance to do that and knew of him. You know, it is a good fraternity behind the scenes and stuff. And we would sit and listen at the combine to some of the older legendary coaches with us young guys and just listen to them talk and tell stories about different aspects of the game, but then really get into the detailed coaching aspects of it too. You know, he'd been out for a few years, about 5 or 6 years, when Coach brought him in with all of us in 2004. And one of the things that he did, which was just sharp as all get out, first off, you know, he had a great way to relate with any kind of a player. And his relationship skills with players and other coaches and other friends was, you know, he could get you and could earn your trust that way when he'd have to jump your ass and make you better without offending you, without causing to push you away. you had already honored and trusted him, you know, as a confidant before he had to rip your tail to make you be better than what you thought you were. And he would sit down at nights and, you know, all day longs and any free periods, and we would just talk ball over and over again. And he was a little bit, not panicking, but he was very concerned that the game had moved away in those 5 or 6 years and some things that he didn't know about. And he would constantly pick in my brain about that. And then when some of the other coaches would be upset in practice on the offensive side about how much we blitz and pressured and how hard and fast we practice on defense, he never, ever complained one time. He says, I want practices to be harder than games anyway. The game should be a walk in the park. But the thing that he loved the best is that when he and I came up with, and Coach Gibbs loved this too, is that when we did the inside run period, the hog molly period, when we did that period, there was no blitzing. There was no extra defensive guys in the box. It was one-on-one, same on same, and somebody had to beat somebody to have a chance to touch the running back and hit him or have contact with him. And it was an impose your will period. Now, there's where he stood up and loved every single second of that period. And some of the most fun times that I've ever had in any practices were right there, right then, listening to him coach.
Longtime NFL coach Greg Williams, kind enough to join us here, remembering Joe Bugle, legendary Redskins figure who passed away over the weekend. And Coach, what were your perceptions before you got a chance to meet Coach Bugs, and then kind of what'd you learn about him as you guys went? I know you mentioned some of it, but go into some detail for us if you would.
You know, the big thing, the perception of before I ever got a chance to go on the field, you know, he'd already had the reputations of the Hogs and all that stuff. So no matter where he was coaching, he was doing that. And in fact, he made a big deal about that when he went to the Cardinals as a head coach. And that stayed with him and all the other places where he's the offensive line coach and even at the Raiders and stuff. And that part of doing that is that, you know, you don't have to be, you know, all that technical if you're that, you know, tough at the line of scrimmage and, you know, be able to, you know, flirt with the rules and toss them out of the bar. And he'd always talk about, you got to toss these son, and I won't say the whole words, but, you know, out of the bar, you know, they got to finish on their back. They got to finish on their head, that you got to toss them through the glass out of the bar, you know? And so all those type of things was going on other places before I got a chance to actually see it and hear it and smell it right there in practice. And it was fun. You know, another thing that the players really respected him, you know, he was in his mid to late 60s when I was with him, you know, back in 2004, 5, 6, and 7 there, is that he worked out every day. And the players had so much respect seeing this guy down in the weight room, seeing this guy running line drills out on the field, running laps out on the field before and after practice. You know, that also inspired them, because here's this guy, you know, he's in the battle with us now. You know, he's in the foxhole with us. So he enjoyed that aspect of it, and the players did too. Another technical thing that we love to talk about, what he would go on and on and on, he and Coach Gibb both, was back when Buddy Ryan was at the Eagles, and they were going against him, and one of the teams that actually slowed down Buddy somewhat was when they developed and or overemphasized a package of people that we call 12 package, where it's one running back, two big tight ends, versatile tight ends, and two wide receivers. But it was a one back, John Riggins, you know, and all those great backs that they had in the backfield. And they would be moving that tight end around or shifting both tight ends over the other side before a lot of people were doing all those multiple packages and doing all that stuff to cause alignment errors with Buddy Ryan and the guys over at the Eagles, cause some type of an adjustment problem. So, you know, he was, you know, big chest and all that kind of stuff, and talking to me about that from our first practice, and they wanted to bust that out the first practice. You know, well, I'd studied all that kind of stuff, and we were way ahead of the time, and he looked over me and goes, Okay, MF. I won't say everything. I see we got a little bit of talking yet to do before I come back out here to this next practice. And it was just hilarious about how we go back and forth about that. You know, he was as much into competing against us in practice or me in practice as it was for the opponent going into the next game. And that's what made things fun. You know, this game is hard. It's not an easy, it's a great game, but this business is hard. But you got to have fun doing what you do. And he brought joy and he brought charisma and he brought fun every single day and every meeting to practice.
You'd see why we wanted to get Greg Williams on to chat about Joe Bugel. You know, it's amazing as you were talking about the age of he and Gibbs and Bro on that staff.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
It's crazy to think about. It's 15 years ago now. I mean, I remember Chase is a couple years younger than me, so he was in high school. So he's got to be almost 30 now. I mean, you
Chase
were in your
mid 27. Yeah, yeah, Chase is 27 now and an executive headhunter for Google. You know, and he has his little stint. Yeah, he's had his little stint at the Raiders and the Chiefs, and then now, you know, he's over there doing a great job there. But yeah, and all you guys were out there and had a great time. You know, the other great stories, which I can't go into detail with, was him.
That's
telling
always the
stories.
Start of a good story, though, Greg.
I love that. I can't great share story. Any of this or use the words.
Is that he would go into great stories talking about back down at the ORFK and down in those days where they used to practice. And Coach Gibbs would get very, very upset if there was any alcohol on the premises. And they would went out there at the end of the parking lot and cut a big hole in the chain link fence and busted it open. And they would park and put tables out on the other side of the fence outside the parking lot. And the stories that Jacoby and Grimm and Jeff Bostic, oh, Jeff is a storytelling son of a gun. And all the things that they did, you know, in between two-a-day practices and after practice out there is they would work on not getting dehydrated with alcohol. Oh, my gosh, those stories were. And John Riggins was in charge of all that. And so with that and those stories, oh, my gosh. And then he and Coach Gibbs and Bukes brought all those guys back. And we got a chance to meet all them. They were around practices a bunch. And they would come out there, you know, Donnie Warren and Ray Brown. You know, Ray Brown went into coaching and was kind of our entry-level assistant coach on the offensive side and the offensive line with Bukes when we were all there together, you know. And, you know, they had, what, Jacoby and Donnie Warren and Russ Grimm. Bostic, those are the only three of all those guys. They won three Super Bowls with them. And there's, you know, three or four other ones. I think Riley McKenzie and I think it was Mark May and Ed Simmons. I think they won two. And the rest of all those guys, you know, they at least won one Super Bowl together with them, and which was a fantastic group when they would come around. And our players, as young as they were, they would sit mesmerized just listening to these guys tell stories. And when they would leave, I'd say, hey, don't get any ideas in your head, guys. I'm telling you, I ain't putting up with that.
It's a different time.
I'm not putting up with that stuff. It's a different times now. We're not doing this stuff.
Awesome. Greg Williams with us on Grant and Danny. I could listen to you chat about those days with Bugs until the end of the hour. We're looking forward to seeing you with the Jets this year and happy that things are going very well for you. Looked like for a little while maybe we're going to be reuniting with you here, but hopefully down the line at some point we'll see you back in the D.C. area. Thanks for the time, Greg. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you for invite, and please tell everybody, you know, hello. And, again, everybody take about 10 seconds today to everybody that knew Bugs and say a little prayer in his memory. And my thoughts and prayer are with him and his family and all the Redskins fans today. Thank you.
Appreciate you. There's Coach Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator with the New York Jets now. He'll be getting his defense ready to go in the coming several weeks in the Big Apple, but wanted to get him on as part of that Gibbs 2.0 staff to talk about those guys coming back to the league. Grant and Danny on the Fan. With Danny, I'm Grant. You are listening to the Fan. Thanks to Greg Williams for joining us. Greg Williams, crazy career. I mean, he started as a high school head football coach in 1984 ends up working his way through college as a grad assistant at Houston and then a defensive assistant in 1990 with the Oilers before finally getting that first Titans defensive coordinator job. Became the head coach of the Bills, then came to Washington, and has since bounced all over. Jacksonville, New Orleans, the Rams, the Titans, the Rams again, the Browns. Remember, he did a good job as their interim head coach. There were some people thinking maybe he'd get that gig, and then he went on to be a defensive coordinator last year with the Jets, where he still got that job right now in his second season there. But you would have thought if you're him, probably, I've seen everything there is to see in football, and now you're coaching on Zoom during a pandemic, and you're about to get your team ready for a season somehow while being socially distant.
I am a Greg Williams guy. I don't hide that. If I had one shred of athleticism, talent, toughness, and I could do anything on a football field, I would love to play defense for that dude.
Can't you see, though, in that interview, why players want to play for him?
Yes.
Now, we can parse up, like, defensive calls and the numbers and if he succeeded or didn't succeed in different spots. But there are just certain guys, like, you hear him talk football and you're like, I like what he's saying. He sounds like he knows what he's talking about. I'll follow this guy. Sean McVay's got that. Greg Williams has that. I don't know what it is, Danny, but he's got that.
It's that authoritative, commanding way of speaking. You know what I mean? Just you follow it. The thing I always said about, like I'm sure I have the experience of playing for Bill Belichick, but the thing that I always observed from afar about Belichick was if you do these couple things, you win the game. I'll give you a couple keys. I promise you, you do these couple things and you win. And it works out enough, right, where you get positive results, where you might change your leverage on the outside shoulder of the fullback. You do that enough times, a guy gets stopped for a negative play, and you start to buy in. You get Warwick Holdman and Pearson Prelue and dudes that aren't any good playing better than they are. You get guys that are better than the sum of their parts. Look at those Redskins defenses that they had, 04, 05, 06, 07. There aren't too many stars in there. It's a couple over-the-hill guys and a couple decent players. There's some good ones. It's not a bunch of scrubs. But that 04 Redskins team, you may win. You were going to get smacked in the mouth by that defense. There was going to be some physicality on display when you came to Washington, D.C. You didn't win your next game in all likelihood because you got beat up by those guys. Those defenses were good with a bunch of okay names. And that, to me, is sort of the Greg Williams hallmark is – defense is maybe not the greatest. You know, he had a number one ranked defense, I think, in Tennessee back in the day. They were top five a couple times in Washington, depending on some of your numbers. And New Orleans had some good defenses. But getting more than you were, that was what Greg Williams was all about.
Well, I hadn't thought about that from the Bugle Gibbs standpoint of that staff. I remember how old that staff was on offense. And as a kid, I kind of always laughed at that. Like, my brother and I would laugh because they had Don Bro. Specifically, just always looked – he kind of almost looked on the sideline like he did not care about his appearance. We would laugh because he'd be so disheveled. And exactly. He had, like, these khaki pants that seemed to be, like, 10 sizes too big and a big belt keeping him on. And he's got, like, a hat on off to the side and his jacket might be on backwards. But, like, the whole staff was so old. But Greg Williams at that time was in his mid-40s. I forgot completely about the fact that, obviously, the history afterwards that he could have or should have gotten the job and they didn't give it to him or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think of him as like a leader of that staff. But that must have, for him, is from what he just said to us and what it sounded like, that was basically just him watching these coaching legends and learning from them in a lot of ways. Like, I think of him as already having made it and being an accomplished coordinator, and they brought him in as a high-priced guy who had been a head coach before. But it sounded like he was just doing a lot of learning from them. And it sounded like because he had been a head coach recently, they were learning from him too, whether it was Bugs or anybody else asking him questions. But what an experience that must have been for him on that staff with a bunch of guys who were between 65 and 70 at that time.
Both learning and teaching at the same time, right? I mean, you're learning about some of the versatility, the ability to get the most out of your guys and communication and all these other kind of things from some of the legends. But you're also going – yeah, by the way, I've been in this league for the last 5 years while you haven't. While Bugs is doing something else, you're doing other projects. I've been going up against these offenses, and this is what people are doing and how they're doing it. And, you know, these are the trends, and this is what this means, and these are these concepts. I mean, it's fascinating to think about that dynamic. And what a treat for him. You know, you go back to coach with the legend in Joe Gibbs. And then, by the way, legend 1A, especially here in D.C., which invites all that. And I loved his stories about all the old former players and the Hogs and company regaling him with those stories. But you think about that experience, it must have been amazing. It's like, at the end of the day, these guys are just football-loving junkies who happen to be able to coach it at this super high level. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it must have been so cool for Coach.
You heard about Bugles coaching strategies and kind of how hard he was on players from Jacoby and Theismann. And I wonder if that was the case that second go-round with Greg Williams. And you heard him walking us through the thought process for Bugle on how he was going to coach a little differently maybe. But the guy that was the center of that team for years for the Redskins under Bugle the second time was Casey Rabach. And we're going to check in with him next to get a feel for 2.0 Bugs and what that was like and what made him such a good teacher. We'll do that as we continue on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Much appreciate you listening to Grant and Danny today and every day between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Eastern right here on 106.7 The Fan, wherever you're at, in or around the D.C. DMV area, or if you're around the country on the radio.com app. We much appreciate you choosing us. We know you've got lots of options. We're on Twitter if you want to hit us up that way. I'm at Grant H. Paulson.
I am at Funny Danny.
And you can keep the conversation going when we are done at 2 o'clock via social media. We have talked quite a bit about Joe Bugle 1.0 in Washington as the Redskins were winning Super Bowls and he and Gibbs were becoming legends in this town. But when Gibbs came back to D.C. the second time, one of the first calls he made was to Bugle to try to bring the team's offensive line back to dominance. And we thought it would be great to get a representative of that Redskins offensive line on to talk about Bugle 2.0. And who better to do that than Casey Rabach, who was one of the captains of that group and was the starting center for the Redskins from 2006 through 2009 and 10, I guess, actually, right when the start of the Mike Shanahan era here on G&D. Casey, thanks so much for the time. Great to catch up with you again. It's been a little while. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Are you in Wisconsin these days? I know that's home initially. Where are you at now?
No, I definitely – yeah, that's where I am. I'm back home in Wisconsin with my family and everybody.
Good for you, man. Very cool. Yeah. A very successful NFL career in Baltimore and D.C., spanning 02 to 10. So Joe Bugle, unfortunately, leaves us yesterday. I mean, you are in the prime of your career. You're coming off of a great run in Baltimore. You get paid to come to Washington to anchor that offensive line. And you're going to be working with Gibbs and Bro and Bugle and all these guys who were closer to 70 than 60. What was your thought kind of on the outside of that staff necessarily at first? And then when you got to know them, what did you learn about them?
I don't think their age ever played a role into it. When the interest was brought to my attention that, you know, Coach Gibbs and Coach Bugle were interested in signing me in free agency, I didn't want to go anywhere else. It was a dream come true almost, so to speak. You know, the legend that Coach Gibbs and Bugs had with offensive line and just their dominance was an easy choice for me. And you know, somebody asked me, you know, when I signed there, why cut off free agency so fast? And I just point blank told him because it was the perfect fit and there was nowhere else to look.
What were your first impressions of Coach Bugle when you met him?
A typical old school lineman coach. You know, he was rough around the edges, but was passionate about what he did, passionate about the Redskins, passionate about the history of the Redskins and where the franchise was heading.
We talked to Joe Jacoby, one of the great Redskins tackles mm-hmm. from their heyday earlier, and he said, "No, I'm not sure even today if, like, Bugle could coach the way that he coached, but it wasn't that long ago that you guys were playing for him, and I wonder maybe if he made changes or was different. Or does it work in an O-line room, or maybe it wouldn't in a wide receiver room or something like that? What are your thoughts on that?"
I think every offensive lineman, even today's offensive lineman, I think they still have that throwback mentality, and I think it definitely works. I think Joe could have – I think Joe, if he wanted to, could still be coaching today, no doubt. I think hearing stories from, like, Jacoby and Russ Grimm and those guys, I don't think – Bugs changed a lot from, you know, the 80s to when he was coaching in the early 2000s. You know, he was fiery. He had a foul mouth. You know, he if you asked him to expand his vocabulary past four-letter cuss words, it was tough for him. but, you know, the thing that Bugs was so great about Bugs was, you know, he was tough as nails. He coached you hard. He expected perfection from you. But he loved the hell out of each and every one of his players. And he wasn't afraid to tell you how much he loved you and how much he appreciated what you did. And there's, you know, as a player, there's nobody else you want to play for than a guy that demands perfection and loves you to death, you know?
How did he evolve, in your opinion, Casey, over the course of his time, maybe away or while you guys were getting to know him? Because we knew him kind of one way in the 80s and early 90s when the Redskins were kicking everybody's butt, you know, but mm-hmm. he was away from the game for a little bit. How do you feel like he may have changed over that course of time?
You know, I think, you know, obviously I think his daughters and wife had a little maybe influence on him softening a touch. You know, the funny or crazy things to see about Bugs was, you know, he'd be in a meeting room absolutely dog cussing the hell out of us and throwing stuff and screaming. And I remember we were at a team hotel, and I forget where we were exactly. And we walk out of it just, you know, with our tail between our legs and whatnot. And there standing his $3 and Brenda. And he became the biggest pussycat I've ever seen in my life. And you're like, oh, my God, he does have a soft side to him. But, you know, I think the way he evolved was, you know, he was never afraid to stop learning. You know, the guy watched more film than anybody I've ever known. You know, from other teams and other players and other coaching styles. And, you know, he adapted it. He tweaked it to fit his style of coaching. Now, there's some things that he was trying to shoot on that he would not change from the early 80s or wherever he started coaching to, you know, when was it, February 2010 when he retired. You know, he would not change those mainstays or those things that he knew worked. But he would adapt, and he would be willing to adapt to modern times, put it that way.
Casey Rabach was with the Redskins, Gibbs 2.0, 2005 through 2010, his stay here in the nation's capital. You mentioned something that is interesting, because I think with guys like Bugle who are characters and these stories come out where they're, you know, they're flicking off the defensive coordinator of the other team across the sideline or whatever – like, we forget how smart sometimes a guy like Bugle was, or as a teacher of the game, like how actually good he was. I think of Bugle, and I just do a bunch of shtick about, as you said, you know, the cursing and the yelling and the speeches and the leader of men. But there was a lot more to him, it sounds like, from what you're saying, too.
Oh, 100%. I think I learned more about football in those, golly, what is it, 5 years I spent with him than I did all the other years of playing football. You know, sitting in his office just one-on-one, going over blitz reels and defensive pressures. I mean, he knew defenses just as well as he knew offense. He knew, you know, how to adapt and stymie that defense and those defensive pressures and stuff like that. You know, the guy was always learning, always watching film. I mean, he'd sleep at the office and or he'd leave the office at 2 a.m, be back there at 5. I mean, the guy was relentless no matter how much time he had to put in, that's for sure.
Casey Rabach with us here on Grant and Dan, remembering Joe Bugle, who coached Casey for several years here in Washington. We had Joe Jacoby on earlier, and mm-hmm. he mentioned this, so I want to see if the same thing held true with you. Did you ever want to fight him? Did you ever have a moment where you wanted to throw down with Coach Bugs?
There's a couple of heated exchanges on the sidelines. There's no doubt. You know, like I said, he demanded perfection. And then when you screwed up, you know, you not only you let your team down, but you let Bugs down. And he'd let you know on the sidelines. And I remember one time we were on the sidelines, and I forget what it was. We gave up a sack or something like that. And I made a call that wasn't correct, 100% correct, but I mean, Derek Dougherty, my left guard, adapted to what Bugs would have wanted him to do, and it just got all haywire. And he was chewing my butt, and he was chewing Derek's butt, and Derek had enough. He stood up and swelled up on him, and Bugs pulled tightened up his fist, was ready to swing, and somebody grabbed him. And but after the game, it was all love and hugs, and it's just part of an NFL game and part of being coached by Bugs and the passion that Bugs had for perfection out of us.
Dockery was massive, so that makes that much funnier. Casey Rabach with us on Grant and Danny. You know what's crazy is I'm sure you look back on that time with the Skins, and you know, you guys didn't win the Super Bowl, which was your goal, or many playoff games or whatever. But I could just be myself, and there are a lot of people listening who remember those Super Bowl days. Those were some of my favorite Redskins teams ever, though. That 05 Gibbs year where you guys win five in a row to make the playoffs. 07 after the death of Sean Taylor where you guys won four in a row to get in, and Todd Collins all of a sudden was on this crazy heater where you couldn't walk away from the table. I mean, what do you remember most from that time with the Skins as you look back now to, crazy enough, what was over a decade ago?
Boy, all those things that you mentioned there are definitely near and dear to my heart. You know, I think it's just all the, you know, it's not the games so much that we won or lost. You know, it's the time that I spent with, you know, those coaching legends, you know, with Bro and the crazy hijinks that Bro was up to, and watching Coy Gibbs just get under all the coaches' skin, you know, by pulling hijinks on them, and, you know, Bugs trying to teach us something that was from the 80s or something like that, and we're just kind of looking at him sideways, and he's like, tell us to go F off or whatever. And, you know, just being around the guys, being coached by the guys that, you know, as a kid growing up and, you know, looking back on the history of the NFL, you admired and wanted to be a part of, and to be living out that dream was something special. Excuse me.
Casey, thank you so much for joining us today, man, and sharing some great memories of Coach Bugle, buddy. I appreciate the time, dude. Thanks.
Hey, we really appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, be well. There's Casey Rabach joining us from his home in Wisconsin. Good to catch up with him. Been a while since we chatted with the former Redskin center. Grant and Danny with you for another 15 minutes right here on The Fan. Every day in our final segment on Grant and Danny, as we get ready to hand the baton to Chad Dukes for Chad Dukes versus the world, we look back at a big moment in Nats history on this date, and because it's June 29th, when you look at the great moments from June 29th, one that stands out was just 2 years ago, on June 29th, 2018, in Philadelphia at Citizens Bank Ballpark, the Nats pummeled the Phillies 17-7. On that night, Juan Soto had four hits and two home runs as Washington poured it on with seven homers as a club, one shy of the team record eight that they hit against Milwaukee in 2016. This was one of three multi-home run games for Juan Soto in his rookie year of 2018, as we found out the kid was legit.
Now the set, the kick and the pitch. Swing and a belt to deep center field. Herrera going back, it's over his head, and it is gone. Goodbye! Over the bushes, into the batter's eye. A three-run homer for Juan Soto, his second home run of the game and fourth hit of the night. And for the Nationals, their sixth home run of the game is a three-run shot for Soto. He's driven in five tonight, and the Nationals have scored four against Hector Neris here in the top of the ninth inning, absolutely pouring it on. It's now the Nationals 16 and the Phillies 7. Bang, zoom, goes Soto for the second time tonight.
That's Juan Soto. He's good. That's your update right there. 56 home runs, pretty much as a 21-year-old entering his age 21 full season. What an incredible gift it is that he is here. A 290 hitter, gets on base at over 40%, as his knowledge of the strike zone is incredible, wise beyond his years. What a player. I cannot wait to see what this dude does in his career. But that was a lot of fun. Drinking those booze. A lot of booing Philly fans. That sustains me. It fills my tank.
All right, you said you wanted to get back to it, so it's now or never time. Johnny Manziel says his playing days are likely behind him as he focuses more on himself and, you know, having a successful adulthood. I guess that would be the term. I know a lot of people probably want me to come back and play. Do they?
Nope.
Is that happening? A lot of people are calling him going, Johnny, it's not the same without you, man.
You demand it all.
We really, really want you to come back and play. He says, I know a lot of people want me to come back and play, so we'll just assume that that's correct. I'm not sure that it is. Give it another chance, but I don't know. as far as being a person and figuring out life as a young adult, trying to make it and figure it out. If I've ever been in a better place than I'm in right now. So he is going to continue not playing. There's no person in football over the last few years that I think as a show we correctly called better than NFL executives. I don't know why teams were enamored with him. I don't know why they thought from a physical standpoint, from a football standpoint, he'd be good in the NFL. From a mental standpoint, it was very clear that he didn't care that much about football. But the Cleveland Browns couldn't wait to draft him because a homeless guy told them to. And they paid the price for it. But he says his playing days are over.
Dear Grant and Danny, comma, I am embarrassed. I should feel shame. I walked around thinking that Johnny Manziel could do it. And I believed it so strongly that I argued with you. I should be embarrassed for the rest of my life, and I should never stop apologizing for that belief. Signed, everyone that liked Johnny Manziel. That's how it should read. Feel free to send it at your convenience. At Funny Danny, at Grant H. Paulson. Apologies, I'm sure, will be rolling in. The mea culpas will come. No excuse making for old Johnny Foosball. He stunk. He always stunk. We were so right about that. Enjoy the correctness. Let it wash over you.
The moment as a quarterback that he gave the Redskins the bird during a preseason game was the moment you should have known this is probably not going to work.
It's not going to happen.
But a lot of people just said, oh, he's so funny. He's Johnny Manziel.
So
this is hilarious. Wouldn't you just love to have him over at a party and we could wear Sperry's together without socks? Wouldn't that be so funny if he wore like some pink shorts and boat shoes without socks? It's Johnny Manziel, man. He's going to be a great quarterback.
He can't hear you. There's so much money in his ear. Who cares what substance it was on the counter in the bathroom? That's fun.
So fun, man. So Johnny Manziel saying probably not going to play despite all of the people begging him to play at this point. For Danny, I'm Grant saying so long. Big thanks to Brendan and Dom on the production as always. If you missed Joe Jacoby, Joe Theismann, Greg Williams, Casey Rombach talking Joe Bugler, make sure you podcast today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.